everybody, I'm Paul Gager, and welcome inside the MTOM podcast for this week. We went outside because we're going to have an outdoor conversation with Joe Del Bosque. He is a producer in the Central Valley of California. He is one that you've probably seen in interviews about California agriculture before, including on the Market to Market TV show. We've talked to him and visited his farm, but we wanted to check in about two big issues. We're going to talk labor, but the most primary one right now is water. It's water that doesn't necessarily make your lawn green, but falls in the mountains several hundreds of miles away. So we're going to find out what the situation is like right now. What does that mean long term for his crop? And what are they doing this year and right now? That is the discussion in today's MTOM show podcast. Sure looks like a nice sky day. I'm glad that the sun is filtered a little bit. It's almost like you're very TV experienced, Joe. Do you any guess how many interviews you've done over the years?
I don't know. We're probably somewhere maybe between 60 and 100. I have no idea. I should have kept track of these, but it's been a lot. You know, sometimes when the drought is in the news, I get calls two or three times a week. And then sometimes it'll go two, 3 weeks without anything. So it's like that. It goes up and down, but I've done so many.
Well, drought is a topic we'll get to here in a moment, but you get called on all sorts of ideas. When you say 60 to 80 in that range, I mean, it's not all the Fresno and San Francisco.
Oh, no.
I mean, you got national people, international people that call you, right?
Both. Yeah. We've got the major networks, including CNN and Univision, Telemundo. And then we've had people come from France, Sweden, Germany, Korea. So yeah, I take all comers.
Why is it important to answer those with yeses and talk to the press?
You know, I think it's really important because our story has to get out there. You know, if a farmer doesn't tell the story, somebody's going to make up a story, or they're going to go to somebody who's not a farmer and they'll tell their story, which may be different than what it really is. So I think it's really, really important. And so I try to take everyone. And among those, I take in others. I take in tours from leadership groups. I take in tours from water agencies in Southern California. They come right out to the field and we talk about it. I take grade school kids. I did a Zoom meeting with some from fifth graders just a week before last. So I try to do everybody I can.
And that, you have people that work for you, so it allows you a little bit of time, but do you kind of budget that in that, yeah, I need to be able to be available because the outreach part of agriculture, very specifically to where you're at, is extremely important to have that story told?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I feel my calendar and I'm always, you know, trying to, and I'm lucky that, you know, a lot of folks like you are able to be flexible. And, you know, if I'm real busy in the morning, you go a little later or something, that makes it easy for me. But it's really important if we can also do visual like this, you know, rather than me in the office. And I always, you know, tell them, if you can come out to the field and do it right here, you know, it's even better. But I mean, sometimes, you know, we got to use technology and do the best we can. And that's okay. We can still tell the story.
You have hosted us as the show. My boss, David Miller, has been to your farm. When you hear Iowa wants to come see California, at first, did you kind of go, what?
No, it's I'm fine with that. I welcome the whole world, as you well know, and folks across the U.S. If they're interested in what happens to, you know, the fruit basket and the vegetable basket of the country, this is where it's at. So people in Iowa need to know, and people, you know, across the rest of the U.S. need to know what goes on here, because this does affect them. In the end, you know, it affects what happens in their grocery store, how much they have, how much it costs. It's all important, and they need to know that. And And I would like to hope that these people understand and somehow this comes back to California, up to Sacramento, and that they hear from other people out in the country that are being affected.
One last thing about all your guests. I think you've hosted, is it one president, two? How many have been out there?
I've had one president and three governors. I've had senators and secretary of the agriculture, numerous congress people, and also state legislators. So done a lot of people.
What's the biggest topic people want to talk to you about?
Mostly water, but, you know, sometimes other topics come up, things like immigration, because we use a lot of labor to pick our crops. Sometimes we talk about trade, but by and large, the biggest topic is water, because for most farmers here in the Central Valley, that's their biggest concern. Labor is for those of us who grow fresh fruits and vegetables, but everybody here in California, actually, all the farmers need water.
You are pretty much right in the central of Central Valley. Is that accurate?
Yes, I'm on the west side, but in the central part of the San Joaquin Valley. You know, Central Valley is really two valleys, San Joaquin and Sacramento. San Joaquin is the larger one, and I'm kind of in the closer toward the middle, yes.
And your farm, what is behind you over your right shoulder there?
These are cantaloupes right here behind me.
And what's to your left then?
And on the left, if you can see, that is a fallow field. Basically, we try to plant some grain or cover crop there and hope that the rain waters it, but we didn't. So some of it came up and just died. So there's no crop there. It's just something that if we get rain, we get something. But there was nothing. So it's important to understand that here in California, you know, we don't depend on what rain falls here, really. These melons don't depend on rain that falls here. They don't want rain. They don't want rain right now. We're dependent on rain that falls in the north part of the state, is captured in a reservoir, saved and brought to us when we need it and where we need it. And that's the way it is, not just for agriculture, but also for urban areas. You know, Southern California gets a lot of their water from Sacramento Valley, and and the Bay Area gets a lot of water from the Eastern Sierra Nevada or Central Sierra Nevada. So we all in California are dependent on a man-made water system that captures the rain or snow melt, saves it for when we need it, and then we have a system of canals and so forth to distribute it.
So which reservoir is your primary source?
So most of our water is captured in Shasta Reservoir, which is in the extreme north part of the state. And then from there, it's brought down through the rivers and then by canals to a reservoir that's only about 35 minutes away from here called San Luis Reservoir. San Luis Reservoir is what we call an off-stream reservoir. It doesn't capture water from a stream. We put water in it, and so it is basically just a huge water tank. And we put water in there for agriculture and for urban. So there's a lot of water there that goes to Bay Area and Southern California and all the farms on the west side of the San Joaquin Valley.
What's the status of that reservoir right now?
I just happened to go by San Luis yesterday, and I stopped there. It's at 44% of capacity. Which is very low for this time of year. You know, typically it fills up about the end of March or early April, and then it starts to come down slowly. But it never got full this year. It only got up to about 60 or 60-some percent full, and it's been draining ever since because as the temperature gets hot, people use more water, and of course, agriculture irrigates more as temperatures rise.
I think I saw maybe Sacramento, was it back in March, had a 90-degree temperature? It was the earliest 90. Is that right?
There were some very high temperatures back in March, and so that created a lot of snow melt. And typically snow stays up there in the mountains till about this time of year, and then it starts to trickle down. But because temperatures were so high, most of the snow melted, And I don't know how much they captured with that snow melt. I would like to think they captured everything they could, but you never know. Sometimes they just let it run out to the ocean.
Well, and that's when you see that happen, that you just have to go, but I need, you know, you have that. How serious is the water situation right now?
It's very serious. Everybody in California should be very concerned. And the governor has asked people to conserve water. And I'm talking residential, they've actually used more water than they did last year. And so I think he now has ordered or mandated that water in, like, I guess, unnecessary landscaping, like maybe dividers on the highways or maybe factories, if they have some lawn, not to water anymore. But the residents have not been mandated to cut back their water. We've had our water cut. You know, there's no doubt of agriculture. We get cut every year, but it isn't very often that residences are cut back.
We're about to enter, if it's not started already, the food versus fuel debate here in corn in grain country. You are always in a debate of your own, and that is the rural versus urban use of water. Has that ever wavered? Has it always been a solid debate that never seems to end?
You know, I think that we've done a pretty fair job of trying to get along with our city water providers, people who manage water for cities. We've gone down to talk to them. We've had them come here and talk to us. I think we have a good understanding. The average everyday person that lives in a city may not know. And that's why I do a lot of these, so that they get to know this, right? If they tune in, they'll get to know really a little bit more about their own water than they would if I hadn't come on. So it's very important that they know, because a lot of people say, "Oh, those dang farmers are using all the water," but it's not true. We have been cut back very severely, and we have for more than 20 years now. Have been going through all sorts of conservation measures, like this field behind me. It's all in drip irrigation. It's all buried drip. So you never see the water. It's just right there in the root zone. And when we turn the water on, we just turn the water on that it needs and no more. We have a very scientific process to determine how much water we actually put on this field. And we're measuring this weekly to make sure that we don't waste the drop. So that's all that we can do to try to adapt, is to be as efficient as we can with water. But nevertheless, the state is in a drought. We've had three years below normal precipitation. It's very serious. Our reservoirs are some of the lowest levels they've ever been. It is reason for people to get concerned, because eventually they'll have to cut back in their home use. They may not have all the produce in the store that they're used to seeing.
Yes, and that is a topic in a moment we're going to get to. I want to go back to what your way of teaspooning out the water to the cantaloupes or whatever it is. What's the percentage of farmers around you that do that same process and trying to hold on to that resource as much as possible?
In our area out here, and I could say in an area that goes probably 50 miles south and, you know, 20 miles north, I would say all of the farmers in that area are using drip irrigation.
In that same concept process, the way you're using it in the ground.
Yes, exactly. There's some that, you know, some crops that don't lend themselves to drip. Things like alfalfa don't lend themselves to drip. And alfalfa is a crop that's necessary for producing milk and producing beef and, you know, probably producing either poultry and so on. So some of those crops are grown in areas where they do have a better supply of water. But where we have scarce water, like here, everyone is doing drip irrigation. You wouldn't dream of farming here anymore without drip.
your crops, the way I've been able to gather over the years, you mentioned cantaloupes, you've done almonds, and what else have you grown on your farm?
Well, last year we were growing also organic asparagus and organic sweet corn. We've had to drop those two crops out of the program because there just isn't enough water for that. Prior to that, we used to grow tomatoes for processing. That is, tomatoes for making sauces, salsas, you know, canned tomato products. And then, you know, a little farther back in the past, we used to do some grains and other rotation crops, because these crops like melons, they do need a rotation. That we really need to go with another crop here next year and then come back to melons. Unfortunately, without the water, we don't have that luxury anymore. And it is taking a toll on our soils. Our soils need that. We're not able to do that. And that's a big concern for us.
You're saying because you haven't been able to do the rotation.
That's correct.
Because of the water. Okay.
Because those crops that we rotate with either are not economically viable because the high cost of water, or there just isn't enough water.
Making those decisions on something that's highly profitable, I would imagine, is a very difficult one. Is that right?
It really is. We spend a lot of time doing that. You know, we look at crop by crop. We look at field by field. We look at operation by operation. We're always looking to see how we can be most efficient. We spend a lot of time on water, of course, and I have several people that are full-time on water. I have one guy that just is constantly monitoring the fields and making recommendations on water. That's his job all the time. So we do spend a lot of time looking at everything, and we compare one crop with another. And when it comes down to making a Sophie's choice, that is, what are you going to sacrifice if you don't have the water? If you only have X number of units of water and you can only do whatever you can with that, what do you need to cut out? That's why we cut out the asparagus and the corn, and we held on to the melons and some almonds.
What happens if the government comes in and starts buying up farmland to take it out of production because of the water use? I just last week saw that is being talked about. How realistic is that?
They're talking about it in Sacramento, buying out large tracts of land that have water rights to take that water and let it flow down the river and not to be used somewhere, just to flow out down the river. My biggest concern about that is that you are wiping out the economy of a whole area, of a whole region. I'm not sure how big it is, but nevertheless, it's going to affect the small towns in that area. It's going to affect the farm workers and their employment in that area. It's going to affect small businesses that depend on farms, like hardware stores and tire stores and things like that, is have a huge impact. It's basically carving out an area and wiping out the economy of that area and the towns in it. And I have a big problem with that.
Is there a counter to what they want to do that parties could, we wouldn't have to go to such a drastic measure?
Well, you know, if you talk to other farmers, and I'll tell you what I hear from them, this isn't me only, is we need to be as efficient as we can with water, not just here in the farm, but in the watersheds and the rivers and so forth, and make sure that we take care of the environment, we take care of the farms, we take care of the cities, but not waste anything. And if there's any waste, we need to know what it is, and capture that waste. And that's what most farmers will tell you. Obviously, in a dry year like that, there's not much there, right? But in the wet years, there are. If you go back in 2017 and 18, there were humongous flood flows going to the ocean that we could have captured. There were some dams during that year that could have filled up twice. There was one dam up there. They emptied it and refilled it, basically. It filled up to the brim, and they emptied it, and then and it filled up again. That's the kind of thing that we believe should be done when there's a lot of water, excess water. Find a way to capture it find a way to save it and keep it for the dry years, like now.
Well, help me out also on one other thing that's unique to your area. You talk about reservoirs and dams. There's also the, you'll see the story of, oh, your land is sinking. It's dropping because the groundwater is gone. Is there any way that you can help the groundwater situation as well?
Well, yes, that is an issue. It's called subsidence, by the way. It happens in areas where farmers are pumping water out of the ground. Okay. In some places, that's all they have. Other places, they have both surface water and groundwater. In those places, if they have the surface water, they don't even turn on their pumps for the groundwater. They just use the surface water. When they don't have surface water is when they start overdrafting the aquifer. And that's another bone of contention for farmers is we need to get some of those flood flows, get them out to those lands, flood them, and let that water recharge the groundwater. But there's too much red tape to do that. There's a few pilot programs, but this should be like a no-brainer that we need to do more of this, replace the water that we're depleting, you know, get it out there, cut a lot of the red tape and, you know, that it takes to do that.
When you said asparagus, it makes me think of a past guest on this podcast, Shay Myers. He's in the Idaho, Montana, Oregon area, and he's similar to you in the sense of varied crops, fruits, vegetables. His issue, is water to an extent, but his issue has become labor. Labor has also been a challenge for you. You mentioned you bring in some help at peak times. You have a good steady crop rotation, so there's always something to be done. Where are you at, and how has COVID-19 impacted what has always been a challenge for you in labor?
Well, COVID-19 was a challenge in trying to keep our people safe, and I think I can say that we were pretty effective as employers to do that, because out of hundreds of employees, we only got a handful that got sick and then they came back to work. So what about the supply of labor? You know, normally if we have water and we're producing a lot, labor is very tight here, just like anywhere, because here in California, you know, not only do we have melons that are handpicked, you got peaches that are handpicked, citrus that's handpicked, grapes that are handpicked. You can just go on and on. And then over across that mountain that you can't see over there, Salinas Valley, I was over there yesterday, they got tons of lettuce and broccoli and kale and things like that, that they are all handpicked. So in California, we have like almost a half a million farm workers to grow and harvest the crops that we grow. If you're growing corn, you know, you don't need that. It's mechanized. Or if you're growing almonds, which we do, most of that is mechanized. But fruits, fresh fruits and vegetables require a lot of labor. And that has not been reliable. You know, I have been advocating to at least get our employees to have legal status. They're here all year. Some of them have been with us for decades. You know, give them legal status so that they can at least, you know, live and work comfortably without that, you know, that fear over them. And then, of course, we need to have a sort of a guest worker program that works, that we can bring people in for 3 months, come and work and go back home. It should be an easy thing to do. Because then, you know, they're not here permanently. You're not giving them permanent status. You just come in for when we have this huge surge of work that we need to do. You see, on my farm, it only takes about 20 people to grow all our crops, but it takes hundreds to pick it. So for 3 months in the summer, we got to hire on hundreds of people to come pick what only took less than 24 people to grow.
And that's hard to balance. And that's hard, I mean, the corn and soybean people, the wheat people will say, yeah, you need them at the time of harvest, maybe not as much at planting. But that's hard as a worker to plan a life around
yes.
That's just kind of been the nature of the beast you've faced your whole career.
No, that's true. And it is, you know, the seasonality of some of the crops that we grow in agriculture make it very difficult for people. You know, people can't work on 3 months. They can't live on 3 months of work or 6 months of work. So people here have adapted to go working, you know, with me, and then they go work with somebody else, you know, in the fall, maybe pruning. Then maybe they go with somebody else and maybe they pick some other kind of fruit. So they're moving around their area with different employers, and they have their own little, you know, their own little program that they do every year like that. And they can do that as long as there's crops and you know, to grow and to pick. But when we have no water and we have a few like that where there's no crops, there's no work there. And that's what hurts them. The one thing, you know, I like to tell people that for our farm workers, the two most important things, you know, in their lives is their family and their jobs. And the jobs are, of course, for their family. And so these are essential workers. This is an essential industry. You know, the country should do something to have stability and sustainability in our production, in our farms, because we have to, we have to have a sustainable food supply.
Your farm is like a piece of music. The labor issue is the bass beat, the bass drum that's always beating, always there. And then that drought thing comes in with this really high, heavy, intense guitar that plays, and it's not always in the right key with everything else. Which one keeps you up at night more, the drought or the labor situation, Joe?
Well, this year it's the drought, you know, because we're planting less. We now have excess labor, and that's not easy either. And it keeps my wife up at night because my wife is the person in our company who deals with our workforce. She's the boss when it comes to our workers. And she knows that we're not going to have enough work for everyone. There's going to be some crews of people that aren't going to have a job with us this summer, and they have to go out and find work somewhere else. And that keeps her up at night. And I'm up at night thinking about, am I going to have enough water to get these things to harvest and sold? We're being hit with a multiple of things this year.
When is someone going to realize that this drought story is a major story? You mentioned the grocery store. Is it when I go in to the store and I just don't see any produce that at all? I mean, is it going to be, where are those cantaloupes that I always, what's going to be the indicator that, oh my, this is a very, very serious situation?
I think that that's something that could happen this year. You know, maybe you're going to have, maybe the shelves aren't going to be bare, but maybe the stuff that you're used to seeing like cantaloupes may not be there. You know, maybe the stores will fill the shelves with, you know, pineapples or bananas, something from out of the country. But people are used to the fruit from California. And, you know, people don't take a break from eating because there's a drought, right? I mean, we have to take a break from planting things. We have to cut back our plantings. People don't cut back on their food. I mean, they want their food. And of course, if they have to cut back on the fruits and vegetables, that may have an impact on their diet and their health, right? Because I don't know if your doctor ever talks to you about diet. My doctor tells me to eat more vegetables and, you know, eat fruit and have this diet that isn't made up of just carbs. Right. That's what my doctor tells me anyway.
I think you and I must have almost the same doctor. They went to the same type of training in medical school. My gosh. Let's close up here with water. Finish up, Joe. If it rains tomorrow, yeah, your cantaloupes don't need it. But the water comes in the right places. The reservoirs fill up. We get through this thing. Does the water story, the drought story, change? Does the dialogue need to continue about treating every drop in both the good years and the lean years of water? Does that need to happen every year?
Absolutely. And we need to be prepared for either a wet year or a dry year, obviously. If it's a wet year, we need to be prepared. we need to be nimble about capturing all the water we can. But we also have to be prepared for a drought, because in California, you know, we may have two or three extremely wet years and then three extremely dry years. So we have to prepare for both. And we have to be on the ball to capture that water when we do have water, and to try to get through these times that we're all suffering. And this, by the way, could get worse if we have another dry year. I'm sure a lot of farmers are probably going to go out of business, and it's going to hurt the people in cities too. They're going to have to cut back water somehow, lose their lawns, it's a different kind of hurt for them than for us, but it's still a hurt.
What happens if somebody goes out of business? I mean, is the government program of we're taking certain fields out of production because of water we bought or whatever, or is that going to be the natural thing that happens if somebody has to go out of business? Or is somebody going to say, here's my opportunity to get more acres, I can become a bigger farm? I mean, do we get to a point where we're just not going to be able to afford to plant some of these acres and fill these farms that go out of business?
It's very possible. And it's already been, we hear from Sacramento that there's going to be 1 million acres here in the Central Valley that's going to go out of production. Why? Because not just because of surface water, but we have another regulation that's coming in called SGMA, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, and it's going to regulate groundwater pumping. And we anticipate that's going to put a lot of land out of production, up to 1 million acres is what I hear. That's a tremendous amount of land, mostly very productive land. And it's going to hurt the valley, Central Valley economy. It's going to hurt the people. Eventually it'll hurt the state, but the state doesn't seem to see that as anything more than just evolution of what's going on.
Mm. The hits keep coming for you, Joe. Nothing sounds like it's easy.
That's right. I hate to say it, you know, it almost feels like the state of California doesn't value our agriculture as much as we do, and as much as other parts of the country and the world do. I mean, the people come all the way here from Sweden to find out what's going on with their supply, their source of almonds. It's important to them. And yet we don't see that kind of urgency with California. They just basically say, get used to it. You know, some of you are going to be gone and that's it. But, you know, you can't, this is food supply. Are you going to tell people, well, get used to it, your food supply, part of your food supply is going to be gone, so get used to it. People aren't going to get used to it. And we're trying to save that. We're trying to save the food supply that we all love and enjoy, both in California and out of California.
Joe Del Bosque, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much, sir, and good luck the rest of this growing season. Well, your growing seasons never end, so good luck.
Well, we're just coming up to harvest season, and that's an exciting time for us. We bring back hundreds of employees that come back every year. We're very happy to see them. There's nothing, you know, more enjoyable for me and the wife to go out and see the actual fruit coming out of the field, and we see it and taste it, and it gives us a great deal of joy to be able to ship that all over the United States.
All right. Thank you, Joe.
Okay. Thank you.
If you have any feedback for me, hit me up at paul.yeager@iowapbs.org, and we look forward to having you with us each and every week. New episodes drop Tuesday from Market to Market.